Welcome to Explain to Shane. I'm your host, Shane Tews at the American Enterprise Institute. On this podcast, I interview tech industry experts to explain how the apps, services, and structures of today's information technology system work and how they shape our social and economic life.
After the past several years, particularly during the COVID pandemic, our reliance on the internet for work, education, and staying connected in our personal lives has brought a critical network issue to the forefront: latency, or lag. While bandwidth was once the headline concern, today's digital age demands a focus on reducing lag to create a seamless online experience. Today's guest is Comcast Vice President for Technology Policy, Products, and Standards, Jason Livingood. Jason is at the heart of the effort to tackle the internet's latency challenges. At Comcast, he is a pivotal figure in promoting ultra-low latency networking and directing R&D through the Comcast Innovation Fund. He has also served twice on the FCC's Technical Advisory Committee and has spent 16 years on the Member Advisory Board of the Internet Society. Jason will shed light on why latency has become a critical factor for internet users and discusses what steps business and users alike can take to ensure they will not be left waiting for content to load. Join us as we deep dive into the world of network enhancements around internet latency and the steps being taken to enhance the user experience ahead of high-demand streaming events like this summer's Paris Olympics. Jason, your work at Comcast focuses on how to enable the user to have a better experience. As we know that we have had more people working from both home and work, expecting the same amount of bandwidth capabilities wherever they are. One of the challenges that you have as a network operator is latency. So I know that a lot of times people don't know what the holdup is. I call it the spinning wheel of death, when they think their computer is not working, or they think immediately it is their broadband operator that's slowing down the process, and it's probably something in between. So slow response times come with poor user experience, and we don't like this. Explain to us what the latency is and why it is a top priority for you.
Right. Well, great question. You know, latency very simply is lag or delay. And when you send packets, like when you're in a video conference or when we're having this conversation, you really want all those things to happen in real time and for things not to have to wait. The challenge with latency is that your internet connection and, you know, your home router and all the other things along the line and the internet don't really understand the difference between, say, your, you know, photo upload to iCloud and this real-time conversation. You know, one of those things, the photo upload, isn't time sensitive, and, you know, you don't really even perceive that backup is happening in the cloud, but it is. And you don't want it to conflict with things like this video conference or other things like that. So I think that's where users often see it come into play, where they are doing something real time. They're waiting for a web page or an app to load, and then suddenly something happens for a second or two, and there's some delay there. And that's the latency that we're really focused on. And, you know, you mentioned COVID. We certainly, you know, it was a pretty frenetic time for us to add capacity to the network and, you know, handle that big change. But we saw some really great examples there where we had folks that, whether they were on our network or other networks, had a 1 gig connection. They had plenty of bandwidth, but they still reported Zoom problems. And that's really down to latency, not bandwidth. And people ought to be upgrading that a lot more often, you know, probably every, you know, 3 or 4 years. And I like to use a parallel to your mobile phone. You know, your mobile phone is probably no more than 2 or 3 years old. And if you could imagine, like, would you still be using your iPhone from 10 years ago? Probably not. It would be really slow. But customers still have, you know, home network gear, whether that's a router or a Wi-Fi access point or something that is 10 plus years old. And the performance could dramatically improve just by upgrading that device.
So what has your team been doing to work through that? There are a few things that I'd like you to define, like CDNs or content delivery networks. That's something that we hear about, and my understanding is that CDNs put content closer to users. But how do you manage where the internet is, you know, feels just like magic to others? How does the CDN fit in?
Right. Well, you know, it's a good point to mention content delivery networks because, you know, that's something that arose, you know, probably 20 years ago on the internet, and that was one of the first things to reduce latency, the time it takes to get your content. And content delivery networks, what they do is they basically create all of these localized clusters, regional clusters of content, and they push that as close to the user as possible. And so from an ISP standpoint, we directly interconnect with all of those destinations, CDNs, and other edge providers that have a lot of content. And let's say you're in Washington, D.C., between information that's shared between us and the CDN, they know you're in Washington, D.C. The response that they give you to get to content on that CDN is going to go over our local interconnections to them in D.C. rather than going, say, all the way across the country and back, which would add lots of delay. So that was one of those first steps to reduce latency. And there are a whole bunch of other things that are happening. You have the web that's transitioning to HTTP 3, which uses this thing called the QUIC protocol. That helps reduce round trip time or delay in web connections. You have other things that networks are talking about with edge compute and edge caching, where they're moving that CDN cache even closer into the access network. So that's another mechanism. And then you have the network layer things that we've been doing, things like active queue management that we deployed to all of our DOCSIS 3 modems, in the very beginning days of COVID. Other networks have done similar kinds of things. It's built into the DOCSIS standard. And now you have the newer mechanisms that the ITF is working on, which we're in field trials, which is dual queue networking. And I can talk more about that in a moment.
But there's a lot of chatter around Washington these days about the money being spent to distribute broadband and the effort to try to reach as many people as possible. And one of the things that came up in the end of 2023 was that fixed wireless is competing with cable on a pretty even basis. Is that true? Can you walk us through the validity of those discussions that are being had around Washington? And between the two technologies, why is this important?
Well, certainly I'll say the fixed wireless, 5G fixed wireless networks are very fierce competitors. And what's very interesting from just a broadband competition standpoint is that you now have essentially three national competitors to wireline networks, whether that's ours or some other network operator. And you can see that in our quarterly results that, there's been a lot of competition for some of those user segments. My observation of that, which I think aligns with what we've said on analyst calls, is that, they're very particular segments of users. They may have mobile service from one of those providers, and they've selected sort of a promo deal that packages those services, or they're particularly price conscious. But it also seems to be that a lot of those people are not avid gamers. They're not frequent work from home or study from home folks, because if they were, we've observed a lot of those folks will end up switching back to us or another wireline provider option. And that's because, those folks tend to notice higher latency, so higher working latency, variability in that latency, which we would call jitter, where one moment the latency is very good, to the next minute it's really bad, and back and forth. And applications like video conferencing and gaming have a tough time managing that high variability and delay. So, and we have statistics on this. We use a third-party network measurement panel, which is very well known to measure the differences between 5G fixed wireless and our DOCSIS network and our fiber network as well. And, there's a very stark difference. And as a general matter, I think you could say if you're really focused on and sensitive to working latency or this delay that we've talked about, and you're using gaming apps and you might be, doing a lot of video streaming and video conferencing for work or school, that might not be a great match for you from a product standpoint.
So the FCC currently doesn't have spectrum authorization authority to enable the sale of more spectrum to the commercial networks. But we are also seeing more of an interest in using unlicensed spectrum versus licensed. And there's a confusion between what the difference is between licensed and unlicensed. They're somewhat used both by mobile and also by the cable operators. Part of the confusion is the discussion that we hear around 5G, Wi-Fi 6, and Wi-Fi 7. Could you talk us through the differences and what those numbers mean?
Sure. Well, I often chuckle a little bit when I hear folks in DC talking about like the 5G race and the 6G race, like there's some contest between us and other countries to, you know, deploy more spectrum. And, you know, there are very big differences between some of these countries. And I'll come back to the China-US, you know, 5G, 6G comparison in a moment. But I would say, if you look at public statements that the network operators make, whether that's us or some of the mobile network operators, it's very clear that the majority of bits that are used to a 5G device, let's say a mobile phone or an iPad or something, the majority of those bits go over a Wi-Fi network and are then backhauled on a wireline network. So I believe our stat for Xfinity Mobile is something around 90% of the data that's over the Xfinity Mobile network, putting that in air quotes, is going over our Wi-Fi network or some other Wi-Fi network, which then goes across our wireline network. And so it's a funny thing to me, and I think most of the mobile networks are between 70 and 90%. So if 70 to 90% of your mobile data is actually over unlicensed Wi-Fi, and we know in addition that the home Wi-Fi network is the biggest performance bottleneck for end users, especially ones that have symmetric 1 gig fiber connections, that to me argues for a lot more unlicensed spectrum that could be used for Wi-Fi. And all of the, you know, multitude of economic, benefits that come with that in terms of variety of suppliers and, you know, different productive uses of that and so on. And I think if we go back then and we look at sort of the 5G, 6G spectrum question, you know, when I was down at the State of the Net conference recently in DC, I heard a lot about, you know, we need more licensed spectrum for, you know, 5G or 6G in the future. And, you know, China is often the comparison. And I think that there's probably some differences between those markets. Probably the average user in China doesn't have sort of a higher end expensive PC or Mac laptop. They probably have a very cheap mobile phone. And so it makes sense by extension that they would want more mobile connectivity. I suspect there are also a lot of government applications for this in the sort of IoT smart city space, if you want to call it that, that are monitoring lots of different things happening in the physical environment, so to speak, to put that very diplomatically. So I'm sure that that is a very big driver of spectrum use. I'm not sure we would want those same uses in the US or other Western countries. But in any case, getting back to my original point, you know, if 70 to 80 to 90% of mobile bits, you know, quote unquote, are over Wi-Fi, then that says we need a lot more unlicensed Wi-Fi spectrum.
That's a real instinct. Going to the other side of your business, Comcast delivers content to users, and you have several recent announcements that you covered in your Converge event that are around low latency and trials around low latency 4K. During COVID, I think people went back to watching more linear television, as well as over-the-top providers, became very popular. And there's so many ways to watch all this content, but inevitably, it gets delivered through mostly our cable providers' wires.
Right, and one of the things that Converge event highlighted was this notion of lower latency, you know, sort of higher quality video streaming. And so think about like a 4K stream quality with really high-end audio and happening, you know, with sort of low delay to the live event. So think about a sports event for the Olympics as an example. How soon are you seeing that stream happen compared to the live event? And we would tend to call that like the glass-to-glass delay, the glass of the lens capturing it on the camera to the glass on your device showing that. And so that's an area where across the company, we're working hard to reduce that delay from when the live event happens to when you're seeing it, especially given the live sports are a huge driver of consumer engagement. And then secondarily, you know, making sure that that is as high quality as possible. So to use another example, you know, we recently had a football, an NFL game that was streamed over Peacock, and a huge number of those streams were very high quality streams. And that was, I think, one of the more sort of higher ranked in terms of number of simultaneous streams events, live events. A lot of the other comparisons globally are things like cricket and football and so on. And a lot of those devices that are consuming the content are going to be mobile phones, probably at very low resolution. So we think that at least in a lot of our consumer base, you know, they really want to see that in 4K on a bigger screen, or even if it's on their, you know, their tablet or something. You know, the difference between a 4K stream and something that's low resolution is pretty dramatic. So, you know, you want to show them the greatest video and audio quality and as close to live as possible.
It still amazes me, and I travel a lot, to see that there are people that watch movies on airplanes on their phones. So what device is it, or is it just to me that it feels like you either need to go small or go big, right? And you also brought up the Olympics. What does Comcast have to prepare for the upcoming Olympics?
Oh, well, it's a huge effort across the company. Obviously, you have NBC Universal and Peacock that's very involved there. And then there's a huge amount of tie-in to the Xfinity network in terms of the video, you know, that's provided to customers over whether it's live linear channels or video on demand, and to, you know, our internet customers that are using, you know, the variety of apps and set-top boxes. And it's one of these, you know, fun events because, you have so very many hours of content and, you know, you can have somebody that's into whatever very narrow interest sport, and, you know, they can be watching that sort of thing live in the moment, and be one of, you know, a very small number of people probably interested versus some of the big marquee events where you're going to have millions of people. So it's a big effort across the company. And I think, you know, there's a lot of planning in store to really showcase what the network can do in that respect.
So one thing that you and I both focus on is piracy and elements around that. I realize that the criminals continue to get more sophisticated, but as the problem continues to be as much of a challenge to your team, I mean, it's just sort of a cat and mouse game that they're trying to figure out how the users are going to get to your content. Is there any way that technology gets smarter and more sophisticated around these uses? Or is it just that you are fighting the criminal element constantly for people and you need to manage this? The reason why I bring this up is because those who use pirated devices usually end up spreading a lot of malware onto all of their devices because they download these apps and then they watch pirated content and then they infect their entire ecosystem with malware. And that is how piracy gets paid for and is connected. And people don't always put those things together. I know your team has worked on this in the past. Is it still a major concern?
Well, it's definitely connected, and certainly, you know, there's a lot of crossover between the infrastructure used to host a lot of pirate sort of, you know, video services and malware distribution and so on. But I would say that by and large, you know, users prefer and want easy access to lawful licensed content. And one of the key challenges is to make that as easy and seamless as possible to end users. And if you can do that, you know, and you can see that now with the proliferation of all the different streaming apps and these kind of things, there's lots of ways to get your content and making that easy to discover, you know, with like our voice navigation and so on, you know, always helps. That's one thing. I also think, yes, you're right, it's a cat and mouse game. And, you know, that gets more active for very high demand sports events. You know, English Premier League is a great example of that, where it's, you know, these huge, you know, events for, you know, football games, in that case, soccer games, and a lot of, you know, reaction to that goes on among that distribution ecosystem. But a lot of the things are really basic. It's down to like credential sharing, and you've seen Netflix and others focus on that as an area. And it's just sometimes, you know, those basic kinds of things that end up being, you know, pretty high return for Netflix and others.
So coming towards the end of the interview, other than upgrading my equipment, possibly for the Olympics, is there anything on the horizon that we should be watching out for?
Well, I think it bears diving in, you know, just a little bit more into what we're going to show from a low latency standpoint in our network later this year. which is really this deployment of the IETF specification for dual queue low latency networking. And it's a funny kind of thing because, you know, when you read the FCC's description of what they would consider low latency, they talk about 100 milliseconds or lower they consider low latency and qualified for a lot of grant programs and subsidy and so on. And that's an idle latency measurement. So that's sort of like you're running a ping while there's nothing else happening on your connection. But in reality, what happens is, you know, you're doing Netflix or you're doing video conferencing or Microsoft Teams or email or what have you. And when you start to use your connection normally, you would see that ping time, which, you know, on DOCSIS or fiber to the home might be 10 or 15 milliseconds. You know, on some networks that can go to hundreds of milliseconds or thousands. And, you know, an individual web page or application experience might take multiple round trips. So you're talking about the average network having multiple seconds of delay for, you know, some experience that you're trying to do. And that's what, you know, we're trying to combat with our field trials and eventual, hopefully, you know, fingers crossed deployment in the network, where that can be consistently, you know, in the tens of milliseconds, and can enable things like cloud gaming and, you know, augmented reality and a whole bunch of new things. So I think, you know, that's what we're looking forward to. And I would describe this for policymakers as, sort of next era of broadband. You know, we had narrowband with dial-up going to broadband with cable modems and DSL and other kinds of connectivity. Now we have a lot of gigabit per second, you know, symmetric things being deployed, often with fiber, but not always. And, you know, we're entering this era, which I would call sort of the post-gigabit era, where bandwidth is not the primary constraint or primary factor affecting user quality. It's latency. And so that's where we're really focused right now. And maybe a good way to think about that is, you know, we have all of the BEAD grants going out now as an example, lots of people getting gigabit per second at home. What's the difference between your user experience at 1 gig versus 2 gigs, or 2 gigs versus 10 gigs? Probably not much, because today there are no user applications that use anywhere close to a gig, even for a reasonably sized household. And so once you take that bandwidth as a constraint away, what remains? And it's really latency or lag. And that's, you know, what we're focused on. That'll be a key differentiator in the future.
Always great to catch up with you. And thank you for all the work that your team is doing, because it makes our lives easier and we don't even realize it. Jason, thanks for being a guest again today on Explain to Shane.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Explain to Shane. For more episodes, subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your preferred listening platform. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review and tell your friends and colleagues to tune in. We'll see you on the next episode of Explain to Shane.